Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Show, where we talk about health tips and strategies to help you be smart, sexy, and strong. On today's show, I have as my guest Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo. Dr. Lombardo started her professional career as a physical therapist after getting her master's degree at Duke University. It was then she realized that every goal we have, whether it's related to our bodies, relationships, work, or life, requires a significant mental edge in order to achieve it. In her quest to help people actualize their dreams, Elizabeth went back to school to get her PhD in clinical psychology. Wanting to help people before they need a couch, she says, she now coaches, consults, and speaks to groups about how to achieve their desired results. Dr. Lombardo is a highly sought-after speaker and media consultant. She has given a prestigious TEDx talk and is frequently interviewed by today's top media outlets, including Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, USA Today, CNN, and The Today Show. Her new book, Better Than Perfect, Seven Strategies to Crush Your Inner Critic and Create a Life You Love, is a national bestseller. And Shaquille O'Neal says, Dr. Lombardo is my head coach for happiness. On today's show, Dr. Lombardo talks about perfectionism and how it affects our health, wealth, and happiness. She shares with us how we can deal with our inner critic and be better than perfect. So enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so I want to start off with your background. You started out as a physical therapist and then went back to school to get a PhD in psychology?
Yes. I love physical therapy, and I realized that despite how good of a physical therapist I might have been in terms of mobilizing people or getting them to get up and walk after surgery, that so much of their physical rehabilitation was based on their psychological wellness. I had one gentleman in particular who was just a life-altering experience. He came down, he had an amputation from diabetic complications, was completely depressed, yelling and screaming at me to send him back up to his room. I sent him back up to his room, just had his leg cut off the day before. So totally understood, sent him back to his room, and we were doing rounds that afternoon with the doctors and the nurses and therapists and everything. And I, as if it were yesterday, I can see this. We were talking about David, we were talking about how he was, you know, probably depressed about what was going on. And the attending physician was taking notes and he looked up and he said, I'll give him Prozac. And everybody in the room shook their head like, yeah, that's a good idea. And I remember thinking, you just cut his leg off. Like, don't you think we should process this, help him mourn the loss of the leg? I don't know. And it was one of those times where, despite how much I love being a physical therapist, I realized this is the direction of my life. This is what I need to know. Because here's the thing. We don't all lose a limb, thankfully, but we all deal with loss. Whether it's a loss of a loved one, a loss of a life, it's, you know, loss of them, something that we thought we were going to have in our lives. And how do you deal with that in the best way in order to move forward?
That's so great. I really appreciate you doing that. And I understand, you know, I totally get that. And I know that a lot of times doctors are so quick to just prescribe a medication, suppress the symptom, not addressing what's really going on.
Yeah.
And so much about, you know, what I do as a naturopathic physician is addressing the underlying cause of the problem. And so this is exactly what you're talking about. You got to address what's, why is he upset? What's going on? Address those issues. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm so glad you made that shift and started doing psychology. Psychology fascinates me. I love it. So I'm so excited to pick your brain.
It is so freaking cool. I thought it would be a four-year program because that's what it says in the pamphlets. And you know, we'll talk a little bit later about how I used to have a little perfectionistic tendencies. So I could not have done it faster, but it took me 7 years. I'm glad I didn't know it would take me that long. And yet I'm so glad I did it because everything we do is psychology. Sales, relationships, sex, physical health, everything has to do with psychology. So it is, it's just a great profession.
Yeah. So you talked about perfectionism. Let's talk about perfectionism. What made you be so interested in perfectionism that you would go on to write a book about it?
Yeah. So, you know, all authors write books for themselves, whether they admit it or not. So just taking a step back. So I did my training in psychology. I was doing my postdoctoral work in Dallas at Parkland Hospital, which is a major medical center. It's where Kennedy was brought after he was shot. And I was supposed to help people deal with trauma or major illnesses, whatever they're going through. I was their, you know, pillar of support to help them get through it psychologically. Exactly what my friend David would have needed when I was a physical therapist. And I remember, for some reason, my life has been changed limbs, but I remember getting a consult from a guy named Roger. And Roger was an electrician, and he'd been working on a wire that was supposed to be turned off, but it was very active. And he had a huge electrical current that went through both of his arms and burned him so severely that in order to live, they had to cut off his arms. And I got this consult for Roger, and I remember I had my, you know, white coat on because I was looking all professional. I was standing right outside his hospital room, and I was thinking to myself, what am I going to do for this guy? Like, obviously he's depressed. Obviously he's feeling helpless and hopeless and worthless. What am I going to do? Now, in hindsight, this isn't really what you hope your shrink is thinking before she comes to see you, but it was early on in my career. This is where I was. And I remember opening the door, and there was Roger, and he had one of those, you know, horrible gray hospital gowns on that no one likes to wear, and he was sitting there with his lots of dark hair on his head, and he had a big smile on his face. So then I start thinking, oh my goodness, not only is he, you know, hopeless, helpless, worthless, and depressed, but he's also delusional. But here's the thing. He wasn't delusional. I was the one who's delusional. He wasn't depressed at all. He was focused on the fact that his life was still here, the fact that he was still here on this earth. And he had this happiness and peace about him that it just was so striking. And I remember thinking, it was like when Harry met Sally and she's faking the orgasm and everyone's like, I want that. That's what I thought. I want that happiness. So I went on a quest and I wrote a book called A Happy You, Your Ultimate Prescription for Happiness, looking at what really makes us happy. I spent 5 years traveling the world on TV shows, you know, speaking to different groups, coaching people, helping people be happier. And their skills, anyone can be happier. And I realized that one of the biggest obstacles to my happiness and to a lot of my clients' happiness was this concept of perfectionism. Now, perfectionism isn't just I have a neat junk drawer kind of thing. Perfectionism really is this all or nothing mentality. I had one cookie and messed up my diet. I might as well have the whole plate, right? I don't think I can. I don't know if I can get that job, so I'm not even going to go for it. My husband forgot to pick up the dry cleaning, so obviously he doesn't care about me. This all or nothing mentality that really robs us of our positivity, of our physical health, and even how we function at work.
Yeah. Well, so there are all these different aspects of perfectionism. And so what was it, were you able to really let go of perfectionism in your own life? I mean, is this something that you really struggled with or is it, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so, and I was a perfectionist for so much of my life. It's either an A or I failed kind of thinking. I literally had a friend's wedding because I was studying. Yes, I just admitted that out loud. So here's the thing about perfectionists. No, it doesn't have to be perfect. But deep down inside, they think, yes, it does. So what I wanted to do was figure out how can I keep the stuff that's working for me? I mean, my perfectionism allowed me to get, you know, my graduate degrees and be really successful. But I equate perfectionism to a chocolate cake, which sounds weird, so just deal with me here. Think of a chocolate cake. If you're making a chocolate cake and you take the finest of eggs and sugar and gluten-free flour or whatever you're using and you mix it on up to perfection, and then you take a cup of dirt and put it in there and mix it up, that's what perfectionism is. Perfectionism has some really good qualities to it, striving for excellence, wanting to be successful, wanting other people to be happy, wanting yourself to be happy. But the dirt is the inner critic. It's the judgment, that constant judgment that a perfectionist puts on themselves. So the whole concept of better than perfect, which is what the book is how can you keep the ingredients that are working for you and get rid of the other ones? And I have to say, even though I personally was a little fearful to get rid of my perfectionism, when I realized that I could keep the stuff that was working for me, huge relief to get rid of that judgment, to get just turn down that inner critic.
So how do you get rid of that dirt? How do you get rid of that dirt? Because we all have it. You know, we always have that little inner voice, the little demon on our shoulder or whatever that's feeding us information that is not good for us.
Exactly. And you know, I work, some of my clients are literally household names, right? Making more money than you could ever count. And they look beautiful on the glossy magazines. Even they have an inner critic. So the first thing is stop beating yourself up that you have an inner critic. And the way that I like to look at an inner critic is I call it the over-under principle. So I even have hand motions for this. The over-under principle goes like this. For every outward behavior that you see or you say, there's a positive underlying motivation. So the inner critic may be saying, you can't do that, you're no good, and that feels horrible. But there's a positive underlying motivation. That positive underlying motivation may be that your inner critic just wants you to succeed. It doesn't want you to be embarrassed if you fail. It wants you to be happy and successful. It just goes about it in a really weird way of communicating that. So one of the things to do is to say, when you hear your inner critic, instead of listening to what exactly that inner critic is saying, you're no good, you can't do this, what's the positive underlying motivation? Focus on that positive underlying motivation and use that to inspire you to make some changes.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. Can you give like a little bit more of an example on that? Like what if, can you give me an example of something that you work with somebody on?
Yeah. Okay. So a client just this week came in and she told me that her 16-year-old had been caught drinking underage. Not the best of behaviors, right? So I said, well, why do you think she did that? So we looked at what the underlying motivation is. Now, I am not saying underage children should be drinking, so hear me out. But the positive underlying motivation was her daughter was anxious, really anxious in social situations, and she just wanted to fit in. That's great. And here's the thing. Whether it's our inner critic or it's someone else's behavior, we need to have a conversation where they're on. Because if my client was talking to her daughter, my client's focused on this, the drinking. Her daughter's focused on this. I just want to fit in, mom. And when you have a conversation and one person is looking at the upper and one person is looking at the under, you're not on the same playing field. And this is true not only for your kids, but your relationships and also for yourself. So coming to her level and saying, here's the deal, daughter, I know you feel anxious and I know you just want to fit in. Let's figure out how we can, you know, change your behavior so it's something that works within, you know, what's okay to do. So that's an example of external over under. And internal might be, I don't know. I have clients, I do a lot with people wanting to lose weight and develop healthy lifestyles because so much of that starts up here. So a client came in and said, I've tried exercising before. It doesn't work for me, so forget it. Okay. So the inner critic is telling her, you can't do it. You've tried it before. Don't even go there. Sorry, that's the inner critic saying. The positive underlying motivation is, I don't want you to be upset again. I don't want you to, you know, be hurt that you've tried again, that you've put in this time and it didn't actually work for you. So then we take a step back and say, inner critic, what you really want is for this person, you, to be healthy and to be happy. Let's take that, stop beating yourself up about it and use what happened in the past to help you really create the life that you want and have the healthy lifestyle that you want.
Nice. It's sort of a positive reframe on things.
That's exactly what it is. Yes.
Well, that's great. Well, that's fantastic. And so this is something that people can start doing. You know, there doesn't take any skills to do this. It's just a matter. It's a mindset, right? You just need to have that shift and practice it, right?
And practice it, exactly. Because here's the thing. There's two main motivators in life, right? We know that. There's fear and there's passion. Perfectionists tend to come from a place of fear. Now, fear includes anxiety, worry, guilt, shame, anger. That's all in the fear pillar. And so much of perfectionism comes from that fear. I don't want to fail. I don't want to mess up the inner critic. But if you shift it over to love, passion, what do you want to create in your life? When you focus on gratitude, when you focus on, you know, what you want as opposed to what you don't want, it's a complete shift. It's a shift in your energy and it's a shift in what you see. Ask your subconscious a question, what's going to go wrong today? And guess what? Your subconscious figures it out. right? But ask yourself, what's going to go right today? How can I don't know, one of the questions I ask myself every morning when I get out of bed is, how can I bring more joy to people in their lives today? That's the question I implant in my subconscious. And amazingly, all kinds of opportunities present themselves because that's what I choose to focus on.
That's awesome. So is that something you recommend for other people to do, to come up with something in the morning that kind of a focus for the day?
Yeah, ask the right questions. Here's the thing. If you could stick your microphone in your brain, what would you hear yourself saying? Now, a lot of us are like, thank the good Lord that no one can hear what I'm saying. That's fine. But really start to become more aware of what you're saying. A lot of times we are not even cognizant of how loud that inner critic is, because it's like background music. It's there. Sometimes it's turned up, sometimes it's turned down, but it's always there. When you ask yourself questions, this is a great thing to do when you get out in bed in the morning, ask yourself questions that you actually want to know the answer to. A lot of us wake up, we're tired. Oh my gosh, I'm never going to get all this done. You know, oh, how's my husband going to be today? He's been kind of crabby lately, you know, and then we start focusing on that. And that's exactly what we create in our lives. So yeah, start the day with a question that you want to have answered.
And then with that question, then what do you do with it?
Just be open to the possibilities. You know, create that, you know, focus on, okay, so if your question is, how can I let's say you're thinking about health, you know, how can I eat well today? You know, then you're going to find opportunities to do that. It takes you from fear, beating yourself up, judgment, to possibilities and passion, and gets you more excited about making positive changes as opposed to beating yourself up when you don't.
Right. So those positive questions of, How can you make the most out of your day, and how can you transform that day and make it more positive?
Yeah, make it more joyful for you and the people around you.
Well, that's great. So what are some other things you talk about in your book? Tell us more about your book.
Yeah. So it's 7 strategies. And one of the strategies is fail forward. Again, so fearful of failure. I'm not even going to try because I'm afraid I'm going to fail. Even our kids, you know, we give them trophies to, you know, I don't know if we're waking up in the morning. You know, that we're just so fearful of letting our children and letting ourselves fail. But here's the thing. Failure is absolutely vital to success. One of the biggest predictors of success is resiliency and perseverance. And if you are fearful of failure, you're never going to be resilient. And you're not going to persevere even when things aren't going well. Because, you know, happy people, unhappy people, everyone has things in their lives that aren't so great. The concept is fail forward. And that means stop being fearful of failure. That's fear. Passion. Go with passion. Apply, you know, really focus on your passion. And then if it isn't, you don't get the outcome that you wanted to get, it's not failure. It's data. It's data. If you wanted to, if I'm working with a client who says, you know what, I'm going to work out 5 times this week after work, and then at the end of the week, they didn't work out once. Well, if they're in a place of fear, they say, you know, what's wrong with me? I suck. And then, you know, they go to therapy, right? Ben and Jerry's therapy. Or passion. Okay, so I didn't do it. Why? One simple question. Why didn't I do it? Well, I thought I could go to the workout after work, but you know what? I was so tired on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I had to stay late. Thursday, we went out with my friends. Cool. That's data. So maybe instead of working out after work, you work out before work or during lunch or something like that. You use that information to create the life that you want.
So then the next week, then you are ready. So you kind of plan into it and make different choices, right?
Exactly.
Right. Or if you have a cupcake, instead of eating 5 more just because you ate one.
So true. And it's so true. I did the Today Show when the book first came out. And one of the questions on the quiz of how much of a perfectionist are you? One of the questions is, if you have, you know, one cookie, do you then say, ah, I ruined my diet, I might as well have the whole one. And I guess there was a group of producers talking about this. I wasn't at the meeting, but all of them denied being perfectionists. And every single one of them said, absolutely, I do that. Of course, because I already messed up my diet. So here's the thing. One cupcake, this amount of sugar, right? And this amount of calories versus a plate full of cupcake, this amount of sugar and this amount of calories. Like, it makes no rational sense, but that's that all or nothing perfectionistic thinking.
Right. And with eating things, there's a certain biochemistry trigger of events that happens as a result of eating sugar. But there's also the psychological component of it that you're talking about. It's like, oh, I just give up. You know, I've already messed up, so I'm just going to go ahead. And I hear that all the time. Or, you know, people are doing a weight loss program or one of my cleanse programs, and they say, well, you know, one day I slipped up and I had, you know, some sugar. So I just decided to dump the whole program and I don't know what to do now.
Yeah.
So what are some things to help people with that? I mean, what would you say to someone that said that?
Yeah. And that's exactly where the concept of better than perfect came. Mm-hmm. So you didn't do the cleanse perfectly. Instead of giving up, start back where you are right now. It's better than perfect. You don't have time to, I don't know, meditate for 30 minutes. 5 deep breaths, better than perfect, right? You choose to go gluten-free and suddenly you had something with gluten in it. It doesn't mean you go have a huge bowl of pasta. You simply say, oh, okay, I did that. Better than perfect. Get back on the same path that you want to get on. Here's the thing. Life ain't perfect. When you change your eating, when you change your exercise, whatever it is that you're doing, it's not going to be consistent all of the time necessarily. But that doesn't mean you go back to where you were before. You give yourself a break, you proclaim being better than perfect, and you move on.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is such a great thing that we can teach our children too, is if they see us doing this, like, oh, I messed up. Okay, that's okay. Just going to get back on track and keep going. If they can see that, then they're going to be much better off and they're going to develop these better habits too.
Yeah. And this resiliency. Absolutely. And it's funny because I have kids and in my house, we're constantly talking about better than perfect. And if someone messes up, spill the milk, better than perfect. And, you know, taking off the boxing gloves and really giving ourselves permission, not only permission to be human, but really celebrating being human, you know, mistakes and all.
Mm-hmm. Right. You just, you know, you spill the milk, then it's okay. It happens. Just clean it up and we move forward. It's not a big deal. It happens. And I'm sure it really helps with relationships too, relationship with your children, but also husband, wife, you know, partners, even business relationships, to have these kind of tools of understanding this could be really helpful.
Exactly. So a perfectionist is so judgmenting. Let me even try that again. So judging themselves, very judgmental. I was putting those two together, of themselves, beating themselves up, inner critic. And we know whatever's happening inside is exactly what happens outside. So a perfectionist probably doesn't want to be nitpicking their partner or their children of correcting them necessarily, but because there's so much judgment going on, because they're such rule followers, I'll explain that in a minute, you know, it tends to come out in their relationships, in their conversations, pointing out what the other person's done wrong. So we all have rules. Perfectionists have what I call a manifesto. It is a gigantic book of rules of how things should be. And for a perfectionist, do this. So I should exercise 5 times a week or else I'm no good. We should, you know, load the dishwasher this way. And then any deviations from those, first of all, send a perfectionist stress up way up. And 2, cause comments, whether it's comments on ourselves, no good beating ourselves up, or letting our husband know that he loaded the dishwasher improperly. And yeah, that puts a huge strain on relationships.
Right. Yeah. I remember somebody, I can't remember who was telling me that they had a rule in their house that if whoever loaded the dishwasher, the other person was not allowed to criticize how they loaded it, just celebrate the fact that the dishwasher was loaded.
Totally. And that's that fear, passion, fear, judgment, no good. It's got to be, you know, it has to be perfectly aligned versus, wow, I'm so glad you did it and I didn't have to.
Yeah. So that's really about relationships and that's great. What about setting goals? You know, this is something that setting goals is something that we do a lot. And I think, you know, I think it's a good thing is to have a goal, but does that set people up for this sense of, you know, needing perfectionism? Like, how can people set goals without having these unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, and New Year's resolutions are just such a great example of this, right? I'm going to lose 25 pounds and go to the gym every day and have no grams of sugar. And, you know, we know the stats on New Year's resolutions. It goes, you know, maybe the first couple of weeks and then gone. Great example of all or nothing. It didn't work, so I'm just reverting back to my old ways. Goals are wonderful. If my goal is to get to the top of the Empire State Building, I'm going to take a couple steps up. And when I take a step back, instead of saying, oh, I'm never going to get up there, I first ask why. Remember, because it's not failure, it's data. And then I just keep getting on the path. I go down a couple steps or even five steps. I just keep walking up. Giving yourself permission to be human, giving yourself permission to make mistakes, learning from those, and always keeping what your goal is in mind. Not just the goal, but really more so why. I would say we all have big butts. And I don't mean derrieres. I mean B-U-T. You know, I want to lose weight, but. I want to make more money, but. I want to have a happy family, but. Here's the thing. If your why is big, if your reason for wanting this change is bigger than any of the obstacles that are there, you can do anything. We all hear about, you know, the stories about grandmas who, like, somehow their, you know, granddaughter gets falls underneath a car somehow, or some car big block, you know, lands on their child and they or grandchild, and they're able to pick up a car that's like a ton. How do they do that? Because their why was bigger than their butt, right? If you just ask them to pick up 5 pounds, they might not be able to do it, but they're so motivated that their body gets into that fight or flight and can do incredible things. So when you have a goal, even if you deviate from what the goal is, focus on your why. What are the psychological benefits, the physical benefits, the relationship benefits, the work benefits that you are going to get from this goal? And when you focus on that, then the other stuff just gets out of your way.
Yeah. And so you mentioned New Year's resolutions, right? And how people fail at those because they have these, you know, huge expectations of what their New Year's resolution would be. What is an example if someone was saying, I'm going to go to the gym every day and I'm going to lose 20 pounds and I'm never going to eat sugar, instead of something like that, like what you said, what is a more, and obviously that is an unrealistic goal, but what would be something that somebody like that could tailor it back to be more realistic?
Yeah. And so maybe that is your long-term goal, but let's talk about short-term goals, because what happens is if we have a long-term goal and we don't reward ourselves until we achieve that goal, it's really easy to give up. So one of the things I talk about with my clients is, you know, let's set weekly goals. Every single week, let's figure out what your goal is. Okay, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times this week, and I'm going to really plan out my menu, and I'm going to follow by it. Awesome. Set your short-term goal. When you achieve it, celebrate. Now, celebration does not mean go having a big chocolate cake, right? It could mean, I don't know, posting on Facebook and getting some, you know, pats on the back. It could just be really feeling proud of yourself. It could be, I don't know, going to get a manicure. It doesn't matter what it is. Just figuring out for you, how can you celebrate each win? So using my example of getting to the top of the Empire State Building, you know, celebrate each floor. Because if you celebrate each floor, then you have that positive momentum. You feel really good as you're moving up. You're still in that place of passion and excitement, as opposed to beating yourself up. Oh, you know what? I worked out 3 times this week and I should have worked out 4, and beating yourself up.
Right, right. So that we can have those short-term and long-term goals instead of a New Year's resolution. And I think the New Year's resolutions most times people have, most of the ones they have, don't even really necessarily have an end date. They just say, I'm going to do this. And maybe they're expecting to do it for the whole entire year, which is, I think, unrealistic to expect I'm going to work out 5 days a week in the entire year long. I mean, to have something like that is, you're setting yourself up for failure. So being able to say maybe for a certain number of weeks, right? And then reassess, is this working out for me?
No. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I would say, be your own best friend. If we could stick that microphone in our brains, we say the meanest things to ourselves. You're no good. You didn't go to the gym today. What if your best friend said, you know what? I really had hoped to go to the gym this week, but I didn't. What would you say to her? You wouldn't beat her up and tell her she's a big failure, right? You'd be like, oh, wow, you had a lot going on. I wonder what you could do next week to do something different. Be your own best friend.
Right. And if people do this and they are – they make this change. What kind of results can they expect? I mean, what's the end result of this kind of thing? You know, like what? How much easier is it going to be on people's lives?
Better than perfect, being better than perfect. So I can't tell you how much my stress has gone down. And this is with my clients too, but I'm just going to share with you. My happiness level has gone up. My relationships are so much better. And my health is, you know, I've always been one. I actually was kind of on the other end of the spectrum. I went from no exercise ever to I have to exercise every day. That was part of my perfectionism. And I would go to the gym, you know, even when I was sick and craziness like that. My workouts are better. Everything's changed. One of the biggest changes I've seen is in my work day, though. I'm so much more productive. I'm so much more creative. And my business is so much more profitable when I went from perfectionist to better than perfect. When I went from, you know, I have to get this and you know, fear and tension to just, you know what? Here are my intentions. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work at it. But it's amazing how when you have that energetic shift, how much stuff just keeps flowing into my life that I never thought would be possible.
Yeah, that's great. Love it. Yeah, I know that there's a great transformational opportunity for people if they can shift their mindset. It's not just we're telling you, you should do this. It's going to make your life easier. Yeah. It's going to make your relationships better. You're going to be more productive. All these things are going to fall into place.
Truly. Right. And it's interesting because, you know, we all have stress. And a lot of times what we find is when stress goes up, we start reverting back to old ways. For anyone, it's totally normal. I say stress is from 0 to 10. If your stress is at a 7 or higher, don't let anything in your mouth and don't let anything out your mouth. Because that's when we eat stuff we wish we didn't or drink stuff we wish we didn't. And we say things we later regret. When my stress level gets up, my fallback is to go back to that perfectionistic blah, blah, blah. So for me, I have to keep that in mind. And it's totally normal for all of us. So if I were going back to my perfectionistic thinking, I'd think, see, I can't do this. What's wrong with me? But I realized that, you know what, when my stress gets high, this is where I go. So keeping my stress down, or if I notice that it's high, doing something to help reduce it. Because here's the thing. Most of us, when we're calm and we're happy, we know it's great to eat healthy and it's great to exercise and meditate. Oh, yes. And when life's going well, it's so much easier to incorporate those. When life gets crazy, give yourself a break on that. Come back to it. But again, taking off those proverbial boxing gloves.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. Tell people how they can find your book, where they can find it. And also, you have a quiz too, right? So people can find out if this is an issue for them. You mentioned that already, yeah?
Yeah, so it's if they go to betterthanperfectquiz.com, betterthanperfectquiz.com, nice and easy, they can take the quiz for free. You know, one of the things I find is that people don't realize how much of a perfectionist they are. So you can share this with your friends. You can see who's more of a perfectionist and really impacting your life.
Yeah, that's great. I think that'd be a great tool. I'm going to go do that now because I'm really curious to see.
No. This is not where we want 100%, but it doesn't matter because here's the thing. Regardless of where you are, you can make some shifts that will help you be happier, have less stress, better relationships, better physical health, better work. And still, we're not saying strive for a C+. We're saying still strive for an A if that's what you want, but do it in a way that's more conducive to being happy.
Right, absolutely. And then people can get your book on your website or where is it available?
Yeah, everywhere. Everywhere. So they can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They can go to my website, which is ElizabethLombardo.com, ElizabethLombardo.com, and there's a place to grab it there, too.
Okay, and I'll have all those links on my website, too, under the podcast, so everybody can go there, too, and so you don't have to write that down right now. But before we go, I just remember you telling a story about the cover of your book, the leaf on the cover of your book.
Oh, yeah, I did tell you this story. So here it is. Here's my book. So before I even saw my book, I had someone who was in charge of all of my media and marketing who dropped off the face of the earth. Is still alive, but apparently not working with me anymore. Completely out of surprise, all my lunch parties in Chicago, New York canceled, blah, blah. So I was I went for a walk because my stress was very high at this point. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but, you know, I kind of had those two people in my head. I had the inner critic, see, this isn't supposed to work. And then I had that, you know, okay, life is curriculum. That's my new motto. Life is a curriculum. So why is this? What am I? And I was kind of struggling through this as I'm power walking. And I look down, and it was in September, beginning of September. So the leaves, I live in Chicago, the leaves hadn't really started changing yet. And I look down. And this leaf all by itself was this leaf. This book had already been created. I didn't create this cover. There was this leaf just sitting there on the ground. I mean, it was truly like, just gives me goosebumps right now. It truly was like, this is what you need to remember, right? This is what you need to remember. You're supposed to be doing this. And it was just, I think it's a great reminder for all of us that when we have passion, when we have excitement, there's a reason for it. And yes, there are going to be obstacles and things are going to come in the way, but stick to that passion. Don't give it up, because there is a reason why when you have that thought about what you want to do or what you want to create, you get so excited. And so that leaf sitting there, to me, was just kind of a reminder of it may not always be easy, but you're totally on the right path.
Great. All right. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming today. All right. We'll have to have you back on again soon. Okay.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo. To get the free gifts that she talked about and to learn more about her and her book, you can go to my website, drtrevorcase.com, go to the podcast page, and you'll get all the links there. Thank you, and have a great day.